Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford. As always, sitting next to Wes Hodkiewicz. Excuse me. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, our final show of the week, and this being the bye week, we don't have a game to preview or keys to victory or anything like that to talk about. So we're going to take a little bit of a look back at these first seven games. The Packers are 4-3, and maybe highlight who we feel are some of the key players that got Green Bay to this point. And I want to start with your vote for offensive MVP, and you're not allowed to pick Aaron Rodgers because he's on injured reserve. So
yeah.
Who do you think has been the Packers' offensive MVP through this stage of the season?
And it's also interesting, too, Mike, that you say that, because I think I would have made a case that Aaron Rodgers was the NFL MVP before that injury.
Quite possibly.
Right now, the Packers are having to press forward without him. And to me, that makes Aaron Jones the offensive MVP right now for the Green Bay Packers. Jordy Nelson has had some phenomenal catches so far, some great touchdown passes. Devontae Adams has had some games where he's really stepped up. But I think the most explosive part of this offense, as of right now, lies in the backfield. And that's not a detriment to the passing game by any means. They were incredibly effective before Rodgers' injury. But I just think everybody knew what you were getting. They knew that was going to be a strength. You knew the tight ends. You knew the receivers. The running back situation was a little bit more of a question mark. That's one of the reasons why I think you saw the change up this year with the Packers trying to widen it, trying to deepen it after all the things that happened a year ago. And to me, Aaron Jones now is at the heart of that. Ty Montgomery's still big picture, big part of this backfield, but Jones has given them a real big spark in these last three games. Thought his performance in Dallas is one of the best we've seen in some time. And also coming back last week, it didn't result in a victory, but the New Orleans Saints game, Aaron Jones having that production, the Packers having their most rushing yards they've had this season, is one of the reasons why I think Aaron Jones could fall in that category.
Yeah, and I wonder if in some ways what you're saying, and I don't mean to put words into your mouth,
please
but
do.
If what you're saying is that for this Packers offense to really function at its best with Brett Hundley in place of Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, if Aaron Jones needs to be the offensive MVP of this unit. Is that sort of what you're suggesting?
Yeah, I think so. Because, again, it's one of those things that every season that you go through, Mike, and you've been covering this team for many years now, every season has somebody pop up that's unexpected.
Yep.
A player, a philosophy, whatever it might be. It never plays out exactly how you picture it on paper going into week one of every season. Aaron Jones was the number three running back. At one point, he was even considered, you could say, the number four running back behind Devontae Mays. His number gets called against the Bears. He steps up in the second half. And the fact that he has 346 rushing yards in basically the equivalent of, what, 14 quarters maybe?
Yeah, three and a half games.
Yeah. It is really incredible and a testament to him. UTEP, small school, got overlooked by everybody, carries that chip on his shoulder, and now is really paying Packers off for their faith in him going back to May's draft.
Yeah, and I'm going to go a little bit, off script, you might say, in terms of my vote for offensive MVP, or maybe not necessarily off script, but a little bit unexpected choice. And I'm going to pick the veteran right guard, Jari Evans, the free agent acquisition from the New Orleans Saints. And I say that because for all of the shuffling and everything that's been going on the offensive line, the injuries that have been dealt with and everything, the new guy, you know, the free agent coming over from New Orleans is the guy who's been there every game and been doing his job pretty well. And we all know how valuable availability is in the NFL. Now, what happened to David Bakhtiari with his hamstring, he's not to blame for that. I'm not saying right. Brian Bulaga is to blame for injuring his ankle in the preseason and getting a concussion. And, what happened with Lane Taylor getting rolled up on, you know, with his ankle knee issue. Those players aren't necessarily to blame for those injuries. That's football. Stuff happens. But Jari Evans is the guy who's been there the whole time. And this offense has... Yeah, there have been some moments where you'd like to have seen more, obviously, but this offense has still run pretty well despite all of the moving parts and everything on the offensive line. I think Jari Evans deserves a little credit for where this unit is.
Yeah, the two biggest compliments I thought that were paid to Evans this year so far was Mike Daniels going out and saying, I mean, this guy's a future Yellow Jacket. He thinks he's a Pro Football Hall of Famer with what he's done, his longevity, his durability, and the level of which he's played over the last 12 seasons. And the other was actually Justin McCray because, okay, McCray ends up being a guard, also learning center during training camp. Undrafted kid, had been out of the league completely the year before. And he said two things about Evans. He ends up starting next to him at right tackle. No one anticipated that for two games with Bulaga being out.
Right.
How much Evans helped him along in making that transition and understanding the communication and in knowing what his assignments are going to be. But the other thing he said, I thought this was really interesting. Jari Evans has been around this game for so long. He can help out guys. He can help out guards with their game with stuff that maybe isn't even incorporated in his own game. You know, there's certain things that work for some guards that don't work for others. And with the amount of experience and how many guys he's seen and how much film he's watched over the years, Jari Evans can go up to a Justin McCray. He can go up to even a Lane Taylor and talk to these guys about different things that they can try that aren't just a reflection of what he does out there because he's his own player, but things that maybe could work for them based on what he sees. An invaluable resource both on the field and also what he's been able to give that group in the locker room when they don't have TJ Lang there anymore.
Yeah, one of those things that, you know, the Packers have had such a cohesive group, you know, with some changes along the way, but really the offensive line for the last few years has been a really tight, cohesive unit, and bringing in a veteran who has only played in another completely different system his entire career, you wonder how that fit is going to be, and there's no questioning the fit with Evans to this point.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, 34 years old, nobody's brought up his age this year. I mean, he's playing at a pretty high level still.
Yeah, no doubt about it. With that, we're going to throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkowitz in that one. And Wes, shifting gears to the defensive side of the ball, we talked about our votes for offensive MVP in the opening segment. So the defensive MVP for the Green Bay Packers so far in 2017, who you got?
I'm going to go with Clay Matthews. And okay, probably for a reason that's different than historically what you would say in terms of him being the defensive MVP. 2.5 sacks. The Packers pass rush, there's no question, and going into the second half of the season, they have to get more out of that. I'm not going to argue against that. But how Dom Capers has used Clay Matthews this year and how Matthews has embraced that role, I think has been one of the best strengths of this defense. They're playing him more off the line of scrimmage again. We've seen the return of that 4-3. They're not calling it the quad anymore, but that 4-3 package where he plays more of a traditional 4-3 linebacker in the run game. You've seen him against the run, I thought, as well, be able to really set a nice edge. To be honest with you, and I don't have any stats to point to in this, but I feel like this has been one of his best, at least during the time that I've been on the beat, one of his best seasons defending the run. I think he's been doing a really solid job there. His TFLs are up for playing that outside position.
Yeah.
And then lastly, just the coverage aspect of it. He's done it for years. It was one of the things that made him work really well when he moved inside backer for that year and a half. He can defend guys down the field. Really, when they've had a weakness or when there's been an injury issue at certain positions, I think Clay Matthews has been one of the guys that's really stepped up and helped them, you know, bridge that gap in one way or another.
Yeah, what I like about Matthews' game, and I agree with you that it's not for the reasons where you're saying, hey, Clay Matthews has, you know, 8 sacks through the first half of the season. That would be great for the Packers to have. That's not happening right now. And the Packers do need to get more from the pass rush, not just from Matthews, but from the others as well. But when you look at some of these individual plays against the run, when Clay Matthews kind of cuts it loose, and maybe that's depending on the defensive call in terms of his ability to attack the run, attack the running back, when he cuts it loose right off the line of scrimmage and maybe is not as responsible for setting the edge but is given the opportunity to penetrate, he usually beats his blocker and gets in there, and he's the first guy to get a hand on the running back, and he can blow up those kind of plays. And I think that's been a big factor in the Packers having a pretty solid run defense, at least in the first half, first three quarters of games. Most of the time, the Packers' run defense has held up pretty well.
Yeah, they've defended the run when they've had to, which is a positive. The fact that Matthews has been healthy through these first 7 games has also been a big thing, considering Nick Perry, you know, broke his hand again. Ahmad Brooks has missed 2 games now with a back injury. So for him to be able to be out there really has helped this defense quite a bit. And then, as you said, too, just to put that out there, I mean, Matthew said this a number of years ago, it's not always, he's learned as time has passed, it's not always about the sacks. Negative yardage plays, TFLs, those things go a long way too, and he's helped produce that.
Yeah, my vote for defensive MVP is going to be Blake Martinez, and I say that not just statistically because of the tackles. He is the Packers' leading tackler. He's one of the leading tacklers, if not the leading tackler, across the league in terms of just the numbers. But I even admitted this in our Insider Inbox column. I didn't see this coming from Blake Martinez. I thought heading into this season, with all the talk about the nitro defense and using the safety at inside linebacker and all this kind of stuff, I envisioned Blake Martinez being very much a role player on defense and a big-time leader on special teams. He's become a pretty significant leader on this defense. He has turned himself into an every-down defender. And with the injury to Morgan Burnett and some shuffling around with the nitro package and everything, I think even more has been asked of him than maybe he expected. And Blake Martinez has delivered.
Yeah, he has. And it's been interesting, too, because everybody sort of slept on him this year. Last year, the whole narrative throughout the offseason is this guy's going to be a three-down linebacker. He's going to play every single snap, and he's going to be the answer for everything that ails this defense. And it didn't really work out that way. He shared time with Jake Ryan and Joe Thomas. By the end of the season, after some injuries hit, he wasn't even really in that base package either. They were using Thomas there with Ryan.
Right.
This year, everybody's talking about Morgan Burnett, and rightfully so, big part of this defense. But very quietly, week one of the regular season comes around, and there's Blake Martinez right next to him in the nitro. Now it's 63 tackles, tied for the most in the NFC, one behind, I think, C.J. Mosley for the NFL lead. He's become a big part of this defense, and very quietly has become an every-down player in his own right at an important time with Joe Thomas missing time with his ankle injury and also Jake Ryan being out here and there with some stuff. So very important player for the Packers right now.
And it's interesting. I just thought of this while you were talking, and I guess the nature of Packers Unscripted, I'm going to throw this out there. But you pick Clay Matthews, and I pick Blake Martinez. When I think of maybe two of the bigger plays the defense has made this year, you go to the pick six by Demarius Randall. Yeah. Who was the guy whose footsteps Terrence Williams was hearing when that ball bounced off his shoulder pads? It was Clay Matthews. Was ready to crush him on that short pass. And then who was the guy who tipped the ball that Demarius Randall picked off at U.S. Bank Stadium that gave the Packers a chance to get back in that game with Brett Hundley taking over at quarterback? It was Blake Martinez with that deflection. So just some interesting karma there in our choices.
And again, it's those things that sometimes when a stat sheet looks one way, there's also other stuff to it that really plays into those big plays happening.
Yeah, absolutely. With that, we'll toss it to another break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkowitz over there. And Wes, since we don't have a Packers game to talk about this week, we'll spend a little bit of extra time here at the end of the week looking at the rest of the landscape in Week 8 in the NFL and what's on deck. We'll start with what's going on in the NFC North. You have the Minnesota Vikings traveling to London to take on the Cleveland Browns. I believe the game is at Twickenham Stadium, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe
you're
right. Yep.
Yeah. Also in the NFC North, the Chicago Bears travel to the Superdome in New Orleans. And then a pretty big matchup on Sunday Night Football, the Pittsburgh Steelers, who certainly have righted the ship after that five-interception game by Ben Roethlisberger. They've been undefeated since that game against the Jaguars. They traveled to Ford Field to play a Lions team that is coming off of a bye and sitting at 3-3. So those are your NFC North games. Where do you want to start?
I want to start with the Saints and Bears, and the reason I say that is the Bears are kind of rolling back the clock a little bit here. It's funny, they make the quarterback change, and I understand you want to get the young man comfortable, but, you know, they're really putting this in the hands of their defense, in the hands of those running
backs.
And
the running game. Yeah, the running game.
I wonder if I'm Mike Glennon sitting on the sideline going, well, what? Why didn't we just do this when I was out there rather than, you know, throwing the ball and having receivers drop it all the time?
But, yeah, I'm sure any quarterback would love 2 75-yard defensive returns for touchdowns like the Bears got against the Panthers last week.
It certainly helps, but yeah. the reason I say that, other than all my sarcasm there, is because the Packers did have success last week against the Saints running the football. 181 rushing yards, 131 of those a credit to Aaron Jones. If I'm the Bears, I'm salivating a little bit at this. I mean, you have Jordan Howard, you have Tarik Cohen, You have a combination. Benny Cunningham fits into that as well. That seems like the picking is ripe there to be able to get something going and be able to get some momentum going. And if I'm the Saints, that is the one area. They did a lot of positive things against the Packers, but that's the one area they got to shore up here if they're going to be able to stay in front of that NFC South.
Yeah, they've got to. They definitely have to fix that. But with the Saints playing at home, the Bears really not having established any sort of passing game yet with Mitchell Trubisky in terms of trying to maybe keep pace with a Drew Brees. You almost wonder if, I mentioned the Bears getting the two defensive touchdowns against Cam Newton last week. It almost seems like they would have to get a defensive touchdown of some kind against Drew Brees to have a shot in the Superdome of pulling what I think would be a big upset here.
Yeah, no question. Yeah. I'm just saying that the Saints can't sleep on them. I look at this stat sheet, man. Mitch Trubisky completed four passes.
I know. How do you win a game like that? But that's the NFL. That's the league we live in.
Yeah, that's the way it goes, I guess, sometimes. So
yeah, and you'd have to say that the Minnesota Vikings are equally, if not more so, a heavy favorite against the Cleveland Browns. In fact, I think I heard that Myles Garrett for the Browns is now in the concussion protocol.
Yeah.
So, you know, to have a top pass rusher, the top pick in the draft, potentially not available for that, that will make things even more difficult on the Browns, who have not been able to figure out their quarterback situation. Minnesota, you know, they're charging ahead with Case Keenum and a defense that's making it difficult on everybody they play.
Well, this is what's funny, Mike, and I'm not trying to make light of the Browns situation all here, but if there was one game over the last 11 years that you probably wanted to have Joe Thomas on the field for the Cleveland Browns, this might be it. We saw exactly what they can do, especially when the Packers got decimated late in that game at U.S. Bank Stadium when Justin McCray was having to fill in at left tackle.
Right.
That is not an advantageous situation to be in with, you know, Everson Griffin and everything that they can do in the front. This is going to be a very difficult game for the Browns. Never count anybody out. You and I talk about it all the time. You never know what happens until the game gets played, but this is going to be an uphill battle. Do you know what the line is on that game?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't pay attention to that kind of stuff. But yeah, 10,363 consecutive snaps.
Yeah.
And Joe Thomas now on injured reserve. Just a remarkable story. Quickly, the Sunday night game. Detroit Lions coming off a bye. They're looking obviously to at least match the Green Bay Packers at 4-3 if they can get a home victory over the Steelers. But as I mentioned, the Steelers playing awfully well after Roethlisberger had that one sort of career nightmare type of game. Pittsburgh hasn't lost. They gave the Kansas City Chiefs their only loss, or at the time, their first loss of the season. Steelers look awfully tough right now, but they've got to go do it on the road.
Yeah, they do, Mike. And this is interesting because that division in general, there's been a lot of inconsistency there. We've talked in the past about the Ravens, the kind of up-and-down mentality week to week. The Steelers, by far, are the most talented team. So you would think, based on that, they're going to, when everything outweighs itself, they're going to be able to get through this. I'm just really interested to see how they play against the Lions, because that is a different type of opponent for them. So that'll be one to watch, and I think we'll get a lot of people's attention on Sunday night.
Yeah, I think Sunday night football, the atmosphere at Ford Field could really be intriguing there. But all right, before we go to a break, Wes, picture this. You and a friend are sitting VIP in plush leather recliners watching the Packers on the 50-yard line at Lambeau Field. Nice picture, isn't it? Well, if you enter Cousin Sub's Best Seats in the House promotion, you and a guest could win a chance to kick back on the 50-yard line in style. Two pairs of lucky Packers fans will be chosen prior to each home game for this VIP experience. Enter daily now through December 11 by completing the entry form and submitting. For complete rules and eligibility, go to packers.com/bestseats. Cousin Subs, we believe in better. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. Wes, quickly before we go, some other games involving NFC teams I think that'll be worth paying attention to on Sunday. You've got the Atlanta Falcons, a surprising 3-3. They've lost three of their last four since beating the Packers back in week two. They're on the road at the New York Jets, and if the New York Jets beat the Atlanta Falcons, the entire AFC East will have beaten the Atlanta Falcons. This is their fourth AFC East game. All three of the AFC East opponents they've played, Buffalo, Miami, and New England have all beaten Atlanta.
Yeah, and how funky is that? They play them all in the first 8 weeks of the season.
Yeah.
That's very
strange
odd.
How that worked out.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, whatever the case may be, obviously not a favorable situation for the Falcons. I think the thing that has surprised me the most is just offensively how difficult of a time they've had getting going recently.
Yeah.
I don't know if that comes back to the fact that maybe the run game hasn't been what it was last year.
Well, there's the change in offensive coordinator. Wonder what they're dealing with in terms of some growing pains there.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's the NFL. These things happen. But it is interesting when you see offenses that are that dominant sometimes go stale a little bit. Defensively, we know what they are. It's the offense that has to drive them.
Yeah, and then also in the NFC South, you have Carolina on the road at Tampa Bay. Both teams coming off of frustrating losses a week ago.
Yeah.
And this is a big game for Tampa Bay because they're at 2-4. They were sort of my pick to be one of those potential sleeper on the rise teams, you know, to contend for a playoff spot. If they lose this one at home and drop to 2-5 in a very competitive NFC South, they could really be in trouble. Carolina wanting to do what they can to keep pace with the New Orleans Saints, who already beat the Panthers earlier this year, and now the Panthers want to get two games above 500.
Yeah, Wes Hockowitz's preseason power prediction has been somewhat wrong with the NFC South. I thought they would get two teams to the playoffs. I did not think one of them would be the Saints. So they've been off to sort of a rough start. I was with you with the Buccaneers. I just thought everything was set up well for them. But right from the beginning, having the week one bye, very big uphill battle for them. The quarterback's great. It's just what's around him.
Yeah, and then quickly in the NFC East, you've got Dallas against Washington, two teams that are 3-3. And assuming that, and you never assume in the NFL, but assuming that the Philadelphia Eagles at 6-1 don't lose to the winless San Francisco 49ers, Dallas and Washington, one of these teams is going to have four losses, with the Eagles only having one loss. A big game in the NFC East.
Huge game. I expect a big one there from Alfred Morris as well.
Okay. All right. With that, we're going to call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, you can find him at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.